This piece, for those of you who haven't seen it, is a figure of a woman, her arms swept behind her back. She stands 5'4", which, if I'm not mistaken, is
the same. My height.
Same height as Ildiko. She has on her head, bearing stoically, a basket carrying a man who's carrying an AK-47 rifle.
Yep.
And if you look at it from the side, you will notice he is smoking a cigarette.
Yep.
And that is an image that I will let her explain, but we are here at a moment for that project where we're close to giving it life. A site has been selected for this piece, which was not originally conceived as a public piece of art, but has become one in its journey. So Ildiko, enough about my description of your journey. Let's have you dig in on it and tell us when this germ of an idea came to you as an artist and what led you to it.
Well, I work a certain way, and every artist is different. I have usually a concept, and I'm thinking about the concept, how it could be presented visually, and it could be a metaphor or just a very specific issue. And I've been brooding over the issue of women in war and how many women have been injured in wars and how they are in the background, but they have a very positive role during war, meaning that they are the caretakers of the injured and the dying and feeding families. And when governments fail to take care of refugees and soldiers, then they step up to the plate. And then since First World War, and more women die, actually right now more women die and get injured than soldiers worldwide. And also statistically, what I understand that 500,000 women have been raped in the US Army since World War II.
Staggering.
So just statistically, just to see the scale. So I thought, you know, how can I really create a piece where it's universal, but at the same time, personal. So you have a larger metaphor, but at the same time, each person as a refugee, as a soldier, or their families, because it's a multi-generational trauma, they can reflect on this image. And it just came to my mind. So I went to the backyard and I sculpted it out of wax. It just appeared in front of me, kind of, you know? So I was thinking about it for a long time and it just manifested itself. So that's how I work usually. I just see it. You know, it takes usually just, you think for a long time and it's really just a few seconds and it's there. So I did it.
Here, it's unmistakably anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the, if I don't mean it as a positive thing about war, but a lot of people would say in their own forms of patriotism that war is just a manifestation, an inevitable manifestation of good things that bring us together. And this sculpture stands that on its head and says something quite a bit different.
So there's reflection of food because of the food basket, and you know we have an environmental crisis, and I think most of the wars about right now access to different natural resources and cheap labor, and then politicians throw in a little national pride, and people will gather behind them and kill on their behalf. And I mean, that's the whole picture.
And build lovely bronze monuments.
Yeah, exactly.
To those conflicts and memorialize them.
And cause immense pain. And basically, I think that's the bottom line. That's what's going on. And as an artist, I try not to get into politics. I have my own idea, you know, how we should live. However, I'm really interested in the human condition. I really care about individuals. And that's what I want to digest in my work. because this is a larger metaphor how societies bear the burden of war and the suffering financially and emotionally, and for a long time, reference to the road and multi-generational trauma and uncertainty what's coming. At the same time, again, these are real human beings, you know, who are still upright and moving, mobile. Their body language is more or less, you know, positive. And we have to care about them. And the strength of this sculpture is that it's so simple, anybody can project their own story onto this. Mm-hmm. And that has been my experience. So it's universal, at the same time, it's very personal. And so wherever I took the sculpture, people volunteered their stories. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who was a Greek refugee. She was 8. She was brought to Hungary with other kids. And so she was told, talking about identity, she was told that, you know, she was Greek, but actually she was Macedonian. So the Greek government told the Hungarian government, well, I'll just teach them Greek, you know, don't tell them they are actually Macedonian kids. So she grew up forging a new identity and started all over her life, all over. And she just loves life, gobbles up life, and tries not to look back. I wanted to interview her for the Bang Project, and she and her refugee friends just refused that. Hmm. They said that they don't want anybody feels sorry for them, and they really want to just build up happiness and focus on all the things they have done. And it's just very hard for them to look back. So like she, what she does, she just moves forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm very European, so to me the whole image is kind of bittersweet.
You've used that word before, but it also, honestly, this idea goes back to your early experiences during a particular period in Hungary's history, a communist country under authoritarian control, and you remember as a girl being brought into that and asked to identify with that and even go out and take up arms and practice. And asked to wrap your mind in that. And I think it's fair to say that this piece is a rebellion to that process that that brings young people in to accept war as a just and patriotic cause in defense of an ideology or movement.
Well, you can really mold young people, as you know, very easily and indoctrinate them, whether it's religion or any kind of politics. So, and this was a system where you just obeyed, especially adults and authorities. So I think I still struggle with that, that I'm just such an obedient person and straight-laced. And but to me, the biggest rebellion with this sculpture, that nobody can tell me what kind of sculpture I should make. And nobody can tell me that we are not allowed or to share our personal stories, and especially the painful stories of our past, even if it's about criticizing the government, what they have done to us. And to me, this is the biggest issue. This is the biggest issue, that you should be able to share your pain openly without any fear.
But you also wanted to make another point. Mm-hmm. There is a reason that this figure is not on a pedestal.
Oh, yes. So I'm a dancer, and so dance had a huge influence on me because it's very personal, it's tangible. You are in the same space with other people, the musicians and other dancers, and that's very intimate. And I wanted to do something intimate about, to create an intimate space. So she's my height. She will be on the ground in the same space with the onlookers. And the man in the basket is smaller than she is. So she's very vulnerable, just very tiny, like almost like he has shrunk to a tiny skeleton. And that kind of closeness and unintimidating presence is so different than what you see in other war sculptures, where you have a huge man, 2 feet tall, or 2 meters tall, on a horse, wielding something powerful, a powerful arm and a sword,
right,
and hovering over you and dominating you. And not many people can identify with that image personally, on a personal level, that I have been there. But we have 65.3 million refugees who can identify with this image. Mm-hmm. How many people can identify with an army leader on a horse with a sword?
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah. You're also trying to say that whereas these war monuments, these colossal images with their overbearing presence seem to commemorate a victory or a battle in a historic conflict, a time and a place. You were so interested in creating something that was going to transcend that, to look at this as not just one conflict, but the human pain and costs to families and to women from enduring successive conflicts. So
exactly. And so again, we the people, including those who served in the armies and the refugees and the populations who saw war and survived war, they have a different story. They have been on the ground fleeing or, you know, scrambling. And they are not in a privileged situation, and usually they will never be in a privileged situation like leaders, political and military leaders. And again, I'm interested in the human condition, how people experience these conflicts, go through these conflicts. What's their relationship? What's the relationship between male and female in a cultural context? And what the dynamics are there, for example. And that's what's also going on with this.
Yeah.
And some people said, well, she looks like an enabler. And so kind of obeying him and bowing to his violence, but I'm not sure. And also I really wanted to talk about the vulnerability of soldiers. 40% of them have PTSD. Or more. So we have to acknowledge, and they should acknowledge, that they have that problem. And denying it or not talking about it won't make it go away. I mean, they suffer so much inside. They go through much pain, and their families and their environments will become dysfunctional, and they're in chaos because of their behavior and their dysfunction. And I think we have to address that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, outside of politics, even if people who do not care about veterans and refugees, the damage we have done to them impacts society so deeply and through so many generations that we have to assess whether a war is worth it. I mean, that's my point, you know. And again, I'm not talking about a specific conflict, but, you know, what kind of quality of life do we want? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. That's why I care about people. Mm-hmm. It's not a specific war, it's not a specific government, but whether we invest into destruction or more construction, building up life and enjoying life. I mean, ultimately, that's the point to me. And I saw the immense destruction Russia did in the Soviet Union. Immense, mind-blowing destruction. And they're still feeling it there. You know, they're just miserable and demoralized. And it's I can tell people that it's very hard to reverse that.
Your art is and I'm thinking of the nudes that you do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's But in all of it, there is a, one can see the intimacy of your mm-hmm. creation, the intimacy of mm-hmm. of your reflection on what you're doing, and it's a real distinctive part of your work. And it was interesting to me that at some point in the development of this, you had the image, you had mm-hmm. the figure, mm-hmm. but you were, as far as the audience was. Or was going to be, it was, that had not completely formed. And then another artist from our area, mm-hmm. Jennifer Kampau, mm-hmm. Who was on the board of the Puffin Foundation, which had been mm-hmm. an earlier mm-hmm. support mm-hmm. of you, saw mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. miniature mm-hmm. of the piece and had an instant reaction to it.
Yeah.
Tell me what that was.
Well, I think she's a lefty like me, so she said, well, we have to do it in Spokane, and this is so much needed, and I mean, that was it. She saw this, she was there when actually we, there were 2,000 people downtown Riverfront Park protesting against the coming Iraqi war. Mm-hmm. So she's, you know, in that kind of social group, and then she saw potential. And I think neither of us realized that this will be an uphill battle. But nobody realized that I'm a Hungarian. And I'm very tenacious. And, you know, people have written up the Bering Project a long time ago. And I will write, if I have to, 100 grants, we'll have this sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jennifer's point, as I understand it, was that this needed to be a public piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those two elements, and she, mm-hmm. you know, she said it needed to be in Spokane. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know that you haven't wanted to make this a political piece, mm-hmm. but those two elements about a piece like mm-hmm. this being a public statement mm-hmm. of an artist in a place like mm-hmm, Spokane mm-hmm. Is rich with meaning. And mm-hmm, could you just talk to me about your reaction to that, or your impressions of my description of it?
With this piece, I hoped to bring people together over compassion. And at least I wanted to hear that people, patriotic or not, war supporters or not, acknowledge other people's pain openly, that we cause that pain, both for refugees and veterans, and by neglecting them, their families, and we can come together over that issue. I might be naive, but I want to hear from people who do not give a damn, you know, about other people's pain. I'm sure they're out there. And so, to me, that's the focus. And if we just immerse ourselves in and bug down talking about whether one war was just or not, I think when we acknowledge the consequences, and then each person on her own could draw maybe a conclusion whether a war was just or not, or wasn't, whether it was. It was, you know, it was really worth it. I mean, that's my opinion. And so that's my focus, that when I talk about the individual and also a larger metaphor, it lends itself to compassion. And I have this hope as an artist that most people will come to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe, I'm not a pacifist. I wish I could be. But again, as an artist, I'm really interested that but because also I'm a dancer, I care about people's body, mm-hmm. you know, that your body, how we treat other people's body. That's how you treat their soul, you know, physically, mm-hmm. and you know how you are compassionate, and when you mm-hmm. destroy life, mm-hmm. and you how you touch people, and how you take care of them or you don't take care of them, from a dancer point of view, I mean that's just very physical, and it's always with me. I don't separate the things. You know, which are physical and emotional, and that's where I tie the two together. And then, you know, I mean, I'm sure people will talk about politics, but You see my point a little bit?
No, I see your point. But you were saying you're an artist, a dancer, and you know, as a journalist, my conversations with you, I hear you talking like a journalist because you want to make sure that things that are real get accounted for and get seen, and that we don't turn our heads away collectively or individually from things that we don't want to acknowledge. And the essence of the Bering sculpture to me is to ask for a discussion about that accounting because it's real. And your expectation that anybody who's familiar with our history of conflict can look at that and at least start a good discussion or start a thought and ask themselves how they think about that.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. And I'm not sure other people will become very political looking at it, but I wonder, you know, I talked to friends about that, like, maybe you will discover you have a Native American neighbor and, you know, they grew up on the reservation and they had multi-generational trauma, and maybe you can start a conversation, reach out to them. Or what we hope that this site will be a gathering site. And people made fun of me, you know, who opposed this sculpture, that where you go to this site and you give yourself permission to share your story, where you feel safe to share your story with loved ones and maybe a larger society and go out on a limb, and it's a very vulnerable spot to tell other people, you know, the pain you went through.
Well, speaking of spot, it just had to be, to me, such an uplifting experience for this sculpture to have a spot, to have a place now. We now know where it's going to sit along the Centennial Trail on the north bank of the Spokane River, a place that I go by weekly, sometimes daily. And that in its own way has been a triumph of sorts. And it's new since the last time I talked to you about it. I just want to get your feelings about having that step and
that we got the spot.
That we have the spot.
Yeah. It was an uphill battle. And we had some allies who pushed the issue and said that this is going to be a pioneer project for Spokane, and this is very, very much needed, and that's why we won. And those people stood up for this project and very aggressively in an open forum, and I owe them a huge deal.
Yeah, and it also says something.
Yeah, and
about,
I mean,
the piece itself, that people would be willing to show up for it the way.
And two key people, and then they didn't mince words, let me tell you, when they support the project and how it's really relevant to our community.
Yeah.
And so without them, we wouldn't have gotten that spot. And that's that. And we are going to invite the Native American community, larger Native American community, and they will have to do an archaeological dig before we dig. So if they find something, some objects for, you know, they can have. And then we are hoping that they will participate in the ceremony, because they are the ones who have been here and who have suffered the most and the longest. And that pain still lingers, and I feel many of them are still marginalized, pushed aside. Look at the Dakota problem, you know, pipeline, and and so on. You know, so they are still the underdogs, and I think it's very important that besides the refugees and some veterans and the larger community, that they will be a huge part of at least the ceremony when we unveil the sculpture, to acknowledge symbolically that. Yes, you know, we understand you are still suffering. Yeah. And I think that's a huge gesture, and we have to make it.
Yeah, ironically, I was just at a book debut last night at Auntie's, our local bookstore, to hear Don Cutler read from his new book about George Wright, a book called Hang Them All, which is about the use of in 19th century shock and awe on the Native American population. So great that they're involved in this discussion as
well. I really hope that we initiated that, and I have to tell you, can I tell you something silly? I was I had a huge influence. My sister influenced me hugely because she loved black people and Native Americans as a child and read a lot about them. And we always thought, that they were underdogs and they were treated so unfairly. And I was like 7, 8 years old. And so I thought, I have to do something about that, how the Native Americans have been treated. And I had a friend who visited the U.S., her relatives, and she described Native American reservations, that people were so poor, sitting on the ground and selling their necklaces, and they looked so sad. And, as an 8-year-old, I was just appalled. so impressionable. So my goal was to come to the U.S., kill all the white people and give the land back. I mean, it sounds very silly, but I always had that kind of streak in me, that I was an underdog as a kid, and Hungarian population was an in larger picture in underdogs, and so I was always socially sensitive. That's how you describe it now, but it sounds very silly. I tell my friends that I was going to come and kill all of you whites.
Well, this is not a piece that celebrates violence at all. It is in a way it poignantly mocks some of the attitudes that go into violence. It is your an artist's eloquent sarcasm at work.
She's a badass, but I just gave a talk at WSU, and I tied together or folklore researches with Wayne and how we go into peasant societies and interview them.
Wayne is your husband.
Yeah, Wayne is my husband. So, and this piece, and basically, it's all one issue for me, that since I was a kid, I traveled as a dancer, and I had access to communities, and I saw mostly dance, folk dance, folk music, and it dawned on me after a while that how these societies, small subcultures, rebuilt themselves and thrived, and they created beauty after World War II. And without political influence, economic influence, they just flowered again. And that's what this is all about. These people will move on, but also the urgency is that a larger society and communities will have to acknowledge their struggle, and they will have to aid their healing. And I think that's why the public sculpture, see? And then there's a potential. I mean, all these communities I have seen and we studied, they saw when in one village, they told us how they took away all the Jews, put them on the horse carts, and they were crying, and how they were, they had to go to war in World War II without, they were just peasants, they didn't know how to shoot. they were forced to do all these things. But those who came back, they rebuilt. And they always adjusted to a new situation, political situation, economic situation, and then some. And then they flourished again and created almost a new dance and music culture from almost nothing sometimes, because all the men were taken away, and some of them, or most of them, never came back. But they rebuilt. And that's what this is all about. We have to rebuild. And, there will be other wars, but we have to rebuild. But you don't rebuild when you don't have this solidarity with those people. I never saw war, but I have to have solidarity with the people who have pain. even if they went and killed other people, I feel that I have to, I have this, I have been always the privileged person. I always had health insurance, I had running water, clean apartment, free school, traveled as a dancer, did my art. I have been always in a privileged situation, maybe the top 10% of the world population who had everything. I had everything. I had everything in my life.
Right.
You know, and then so yeah. I feel that this is my obligation as an artist and also a world citizen to press these issues, that we have to mend these people somehow without judgment.